All right, welcome back to Sports Central. I'm looking forward to this. This will be a good trip down memory lane with my good friend Jed Donahue from the Pennsylvania Sports Network. He's covered Penn State for many, many years, the Big Ten for many. I said a few minutes ago, Jed, that doesn't mean you're old just because you've covered college football for a long. You're not old, are you, Jed?
I don't know how old I am. I just I started freaking out when I think the year 2000 is like 21 years ago. And I started covering Penn State in 1987.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, holy cow, Corey, this is like, it's a blur. No doubt about it.
And how long?
A lot of good memories, good friends like you along the way.
How long had you covered the Big Ten, Ohio State, or anybody else prior to covering Penn State, Jed?
I covered West Virginia for like 4 years with Don Nealon.
Okay.
And, you know, was there in 84 when they beat Penn State, which was like the biggest thing since they discovered coal in West Virginia. And they finally quelled the Nittany Lions. And, you know, Rich Rodriguez, a future coach, with a big interception in that game. And who knew that 3 years later I'd be covering the Nittany Lions and Joe Paterno a year after they won the national title and everything like that.
Jed Donahue from the Pennsylvania Sports Network. We're going down memory lane here. I'm going to give you an opportunity. And you can use any criteria that you like. It can be a game, a championship, a player, a sequel, anything that you like. Jed, when I ask you or if people come up, Jed, what's your favorite Penn State football memory? What do you tell them?
I think the 94 season, but there are moments in that 94 season that kind of stand out. The Michigan game that year, I ended up going up on the photo deck to watch the game. It was one of those perfect, like, 65-degree days, not a cloud in the sky. Michigan Stadium at the height of its powers. They had a great team. And the thing about that game was that, you know, Penn State was up to, I think, number three or four. But Michigan had been beaten the week before on that Hail Mary by Cordell Stewart to Michael Westbrook. And Michigan fell from three to number nine. And to be honest with you, Corey, I really think that had a lot to do with, you know, Penn State kind of not winning the national title that year in that beauty contest that was with Nebraska, because Michigan fell from three to nine and Colorado went to like three or two and got pounded by Nebraska later that year. And Nebraska got a lot of love for that head-to-head win over Colorado. And then, you know, traveled with the team that year, the Rose Bowl, all the controversy that was involved with that year. And really, one of the greatest offenses in Big Ten history. And, you know, also another snapshot from 94, Corey, let's talk about the 96-yard drive at Illinois through the frozen drizzle. Brian Milne, who had had leukemia, three touchdown runs. And, you know, I talked to Kerry Collins about that, and he'd gone into the huddle, and he goes, anybody mind if Milne carries here? No. And he rolls in with about a minute and a half to go, and, you know, as great as that team was, and Corey, you've written about this many times, as great as these teams can be, you always have one game that you've got to overcome everything. And, you know, they were down 21-0 in that game and roared back and won and had that monster drive. I think it might be the greatest drive in Penn State history, and it's certainly something that I'll never forget, standing on that sideline and watching them convert fourth down twice, third down like five times. It was absolutely incredible.
Yeah, that's a great story. Let's continue with 94 there, Jed. If I were to ask you who deserved the national championship that year, Penn State or Nebraska? Now, look, 110% of Penn State fans would say it was Penn State. Greatest offense ever, Kerry Collins, look at all those guys that played in the NFL. Penn State fans remain adamant to this day that Penn State would have beaten Nebraska that year. I interviewed Tommy Frazier, I don't know, six, 7 years ago, called him up in Nebraska. He and the Nebraska folks, Jed, are adamant that they would have beaten Penn State. And so, obviously, you go out there and they'll say, Penn State didn't, you know, they didn't play as tough of a schedule, or whatever the case might be. When you look back on it all these years later, who should have won the title?
Penn State, and I have no problem saying that, because there was a bias. You know, remember when they beat Ohio State 63-14? Well, that Buckeye team ended up, you know, going toe-to-toe with Alabama in the Citrus Bowl. We were watching that in the Rose Bowl press box. And that Ohio State team, if you remember, in 95, 96, they were right there. They had Eddie George, you know, a future Heisman winner. And Penn State absolutely destroyed them. And then the week later, Joe called off the Dogs when they're up 35 to like 14 at Indiana.
Yep.
And they scored a touchdown on the last play of the game, ended up like 34-29. Well, everybody that looks at the final score goes, well, they struggled at Indiana. They didn't struggle at Indiana. They pounded the Hoosiers. Joe just called the Dogs off and midway through the third quarter. They could have scored 100 points if they wanted to. And that's one of the areas there. The other was the controversy. It was a great year to do talk, right, and cover Penn State, Corey?
Yeah, right.
Because everybody was just absolutely up in arms about Nebraska getting all the love and the fact that a lot of the guys that had top 20 votes in the AP at that point in time did not vote for Penn State. They voted for Nebraska. We watched a guy call in his vote in the press box and had Colorado still ahead of Penn State in his final poll after they destroyed Oregon in the second half in the Rose Bowl. So it was a good year to be covering Penn State and on the talk circuit, let me tell you that, because I think I've told you this story on or off the air. I went to California. It was going to be an hour show. I landed in Chicago. It was 2 hours, and then it was a three-hour show when I got to California. That's how much interest there was with sponsors. We just could not give people enough information about Penn State. And that 10 days out there, we just couldn't spoon-feed enough information. It was just out of control.
Jed Donahue joining us from the Pennsylvania Sports Network. Just all great stories. And, again, you think back just with where we were with college football at that point. You know, everything, and for many years prior to that, all the undefeated seasons Penn State had had and the subjectivity that would take place and everything. Penn State fans felt like they should have had more national champions. That was Tom Osborne's first. Maybe people felt Tom Osborne deserved that first. But isn't it amazing, Jed, as we fast forward? Because back then, didn't play each other. Then we had the BCS for a while, and for as much as people griped about the BCS, a lot of times we did get the two best teams. I mean, who will never ever forget Texas USC in that classic game? At least the BCS gave us those two, and then we go to four. Now, Jed, we're going to be looking at 12 before two. Could you imagine the 1994 season with 12 playoff teams and nobody? There's no debate 27 years later. Everything would have been solved on the field.
That's certainly loosened the drain, 94. That led to the BCS. It's like Joe chasing down the officials, right, against Iowa following a 2002 overtime loss. That led to instant replay in the Big Ten and then instant replay in college football as we know it. But that 94 fight, because, you know, obviously the Big 12 champion or the Big 8 at the time was obligated to go to the Orange Bowl, and obviously the Big Ten champ went to the Rose Bowl. I mean, he grew up in Columbus, Ohio, with Ohio State. Making the Rose Bowl was the ultimate, ultimate prize. And to give you an example, Michigan didn't really care whether they were in the national title race. It was about the Rose Bowl. And Bo Schembechler always said, if you win the Rose Bowl and you're the Big Ten champ, everything should take care of itself. Well, Penn State went through that, and it didn't take care of itself. We had the controversy at the end.
Jed Donahue joining us. I'll share my favorite Penn State sports memory, and it's much more recent. And I picked this specifically because of what it did to rejuvenate Penn State, and that's the 2016 win over Ohio State. I've gone back and watched that game a few times, Jed, and I remember just how good Ohio State was that night. It's not like Penn State was playing great. They were really having a tough time moving the ball. Urban Meyer decides to try for the long field goal. It's blocked, returned for it. And, you know, here's the thing, folks. The punter, the holder for Ohio State, who was holding the field goal, I think his name might have been Johnston or something. He's chasing down Grant Haley. This had to be the fastest punter in the history of football because he damn near caught Grant Haley. And I remember, you know, talking to Neil Riddell in the press box. If Ohio State would have tackled Grant Haley outside of the end zone, even at the 4 or 5 yard line, I'm not certain Penn State gets into the end zone. That's how they were having a tough time moving the ball, but they end up getting that block, the return for the touchdown. What an unbelievable springboard that wound up being with Joe Moorhead, Trace McSorley, Saquon Barkley, Chris Godwin, Gesicki. That team was loaded. To me, when I look at the history of Penn State football, there's all this history that you're talking about with 94 and obviously the undefeated teams in the 60s and 70s and Joe and all the success. But then for the younger generation that maybe Penn State football, after going through the scandal and going through the sanctions and everything, everybody wondered if Penn State football could get back to that national prominence. We can point to that blocked field goal in return for a touchdown, Jed, to me, and say that was the singular moment that returned Penn State football to prominence.
Oh, I agree with you. And the other game, too, would be the whiteout game in 2005 where they upset Ohio State, a really good Ohio State team, that did not lose again for 23 games until they lost to Florida in the national championship game that following season. That was an incredible Buckeye team that they beat in the whiteout in 2005 because they were coming off really subpar seasons. I mean, 2002, they were pretty good. But, you know, 2001, 2002, 2003, and 4, remember everybody, oh, is Joe Paterno over the hill? Let's get rid of him. And then 2005, the whiteout game certainly can draw similar comparisons to what you talked about in 2016, which, by the way, I totally agree with everything you said about 2016. But the whiteout game has similar parallels.
Yeah.
Because Penn State had been struggling in the early 2000s. They got Derek Williams. They got King from Monroeville, a couple of five stars, and turned the whole program around. And had a decent run through that Orange Bowl win and triple overtime against Florida State. But then, as you well know, the Sandusky scandal hits. And then they had that lightning strike with the blocked field goal by Marcus Allen. And then Haley, it was Cameron Johnson, by the way,
yeah,
who was an Australian rules punter who was kind of an everyday guy in Australian rules football. He's pretty good, pretty fast.
Remember how
almost
fast
him down.
He almost ran him. Do you agree with me? If he tackles Grant Haley at the 7-8 yard, does Penn State get in the end zone that game?
Would have been interesting. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, they had another punter at Ohio State that actually saved the Fiesta Bowl. A guy named Andy Groom ran 40 yards across the field to tackle the Miami return guy who looked like he might score right before the end of regulation. So, you know, I guess they have athletic punters at Ohio State, too. But that was a big-time play in 16. And then, you know, I wasn't in Indianapolis. I know you were. That was a really good Wisconsin team.
No doubt.
They trailed.
Yep.
And then didn't Haley make the big play on the 4th-and-1 call or
yep,
whatever that was?
Along with Kevin Givens, who was from right here in Altoona. He was in on that tackle, the fourth down tackle. And look, we could go on and on and on with all kinds of memories. Certainly 48-14 over Pitt. There have been surveys and everything done. People's all-time favorite Penn State memory. So many people will point even to 48-14, even over the national championships. I want to close with this with you, Jed, because you and I, we both just talked a lot about Ohio State games, the 2005 wideout win, which certainly was a springboard back, and then going to the Rose Bowl in 08. That was huge for the program. 2016 was as well. If I sit here and tell you that Penn State never has to beat Ohio State ever again, not ever again, if we're sitting here right now and Penn State never, ever, ever beats Ohio State ever again, and it can still go to the college football playoff a ton, not once or twice, hell, if they lost Ohio State every single year forever, if that's the only game they lost, they'd be in the playoff every single year. Does that sit well with you, Jed?
I get where you're going with this, with the expansion of the playoffs, because what, didn't you and I go the math and say that they would have been in
16, 17, 18, 19, they would have been in the top 12, and you can, if you go 11, hell, if you go 10-2, lose to Ohio State, lose to somebody else, you can still finish in the top. But after all these big Ohio State games that we've seen, and that's the measuring stick, and you want it to be the best, you got to beat them. Hey, Penn State never has to beat Ohio State, and they've still got a path. It's just hard for me to wrap my mind around that.
Well, I think you got to beat Ohio State for this reason. I mean, it's the R word, right? Isn't it recruiting? That's a big advantage, say, of Ohio State. They never beat us anyway. They're just going to be in the playoff as kind of a, you know, maybe one of these guys that's going to be the 10 or 11 or 12 seed. We don't have to worry about them per se. I think you got to beat them now and then, don't you think, Corey? Because of recruiting,
I think you have to beat them probably to maintain a real high level. But theoretically, even if you don't, you're right. If you don't beat them, you're basically going to be that 10, 11, 12 seed all the time. So if you beat them and you get the recruiting, and then maybe now you're a 2, 3, 4, 5 seed and you actually have a more realistic shot to win it, that is absolutely true. But if you don't beat them, you can still find a way to get in.
Yeah, you're right, Corey. I mean, there's still, you know, there's a pathway that's always going to be there if Ohio State's going to be your only conference loss, or say if you have a second loss to a team that's in the top 15, say, then I think you're going to be safe pretty much every year mm-hmm. with Penn State because, you know, as you said, and you're totally right about this, you know, it's going to be about TV ratings, right, eventually. I mean, somebody at 13, 14, or 15 is going to get screwed. And, you know, it's going to be some of the big profile names. And, you know, Penn State certainly checks those boxes, don't they? So they're probably going to win out over an American Athletic Conference team
Absolutely.
Or something
yep.
along those lines. But, you know, you lose to Ohio State most of the time. It doesn't leave you a lot of wiggle room. Although with a 12-team playoff, as you have pointed out, yeah, you certainly have. It's not the end like it is now.
Hey, real quick, since we're going down memory lane, if I ask you who's the one player you most enjoyed watching at Penn State over the years, you can pick anybody. Saquon comes to mind for a lot of people because he was so electrifying. But anybody over all these years, Jed, who would you pick?
Well, I saw Kurt Warner in the Fiesta Bowl live, so that's the best offensive player, dynamic second half. I think the best player pound for pound that I've ever seen is LeVar Arrington. And I think if you took everybody off the street that knows the 90s into the 2000s, isn't that the guy? I mean, you had to account for where he was at all times on the field, on every snap, because he was that disruptive. I mean, you were not guaranteed extra points because he just had that unbelievable reach. Got to be LeVar, don't you think?
I mean, in terms of just pound for pound, greatest talent, probably. I mean, maybe Micah Parsons could be in that discussion. But clearly LeVar was unbelievably physically gifted, and a lot of people will say him. I'm going to go a completely different direction, Jed, and I'm going to say the player that I've most enjoyed watching at Penn State was Trace McSorley.
Good choice. The really good.
The ultimate gamer. I remember writing all these stories and wondering when he took over for Hackenberg, this kid is so small. He's going to get crunched. Is he going to make it through a seat? That dude was tough as nails. He came up. He delivered so many big plays. Is he anywhere near the greatest players of all time at Penn State? No, although he does hold a lot of passing records. But for me, what do you remember about Trace McSorley's career, Jed?
Iowa.
Yeah,
the
right.
Walk-off win.
Yep.
The other thing is the play they wouldn't let him have, the fourth and short
yes.
against Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
It should have been McSorley's call right there. But just his ability to lead teams back from the brink of disaster. He was just tough. The team certainly dialed into his emotions and everything like that. That's a great choice. And, you know, what, a two-star recruit?
Yeah.
That was recruited as a defensive back.
Probably
could have played it. But just a dynamic performer. And, again, that Big Ten championship game performance against Wisconsin, you know, just he was on fire. He had great weapons, knew what he was doing. And, you know, I agree with that. Another guy that I put on the list, a contemporary of ours, it's unfortunate injuries have cut his NFL career short, but I think you would agree with me that Sean Lee has got to be on the list of our all-time favorite guys that not only do you interview, but just a class act and just a hell of a football player.
I was going through my mind, and Sean Lee and Paul Posadosny both jumped in there for the reasons you mentioned. Tremendous players, but just really good people and representatives of Penn State. If you want to think about linebacker, Jack Ham, you go back in the day, to me, of the modern era, the Paul Posadosny and Sean Lee, those guys were just incredible.
Yeah, Navarro Bowman and all of yep. that. I remember talking to Jim Render. I saw Lee, I know New York Time deal, but He had 24 points in a losing cause in the Whipple championship game at Upper St. Clair. And I knew Jim doing the state championships and things when they were in Altoona and everything, and they did a great job hosting. But I asked him, I go, why is he only a three-star recruit? And he goes, don't worry about it. He'll be just fine. He's going to be an All-American at Penn State. And if Jim Render says that, that was good enough for me at the time. And he delivered the goods. He was a two-time All-American. And again, Corey, I know you interviewed him a lot. You know, win or lose, that kid always sat in front and gave you what was really going on. One of my all-time favorite guys that has ever played at Penn State is Sean Lee, without a doubt.
I love picking your brain. These are great, great memories as we get set to start another season here. Jed Donahue from the Pennsylvania Sports Network, thank you so much, buddy. Really appreciate the time.
Anytime, Corey. Thank you, my friend. See ya.
Good stuff.